goes on years, though no standard anymore. What it takes, who I am, where I've been, belong.
Hodge Hodge LA. Welcome to a very special edition of Hodge Hodge LA. I say that, it sounds like a special. Welcome to a very special episode of Blossom, like Blossom getting roofied or something. But a very special episode of Hot Yards LA. Got my boy, Ashawn Larkins, coming on the show. Defensive back coach slash special teams coordinator at Jacksonville State in Alabama. Originally had my buddy, Ricky Ronnie, who's the quarterback's coach at Penn State, was supposed to come on the show. But last minute, Penn State put the kibosh on it. Wouldn't let him come on. I don't know what the hell. You know, freedom of speech, just watch what you say. I believe the great Ice-T said that. But, yeah, wouldn't let him come on the show. Wouldn't let him come talk to his old buddy on a internet radio station. They just begin. Because I imagine because of all the Jerry Sandusky shit, even though, you know, I lived through that. I knew the guy. But they wouldn't let him come on. So fuck him. Fuck Penn State. Forget him. You know, what is this? This is America, for Christ's sakes. The guy can't come on the show and talk to his old friend. Screw it. But I replaced him with someone better. My boy, Ashawn Larkins, who's going to be on the show in a couple minutes, calling him up right now as we speak. Hey, end of the Olympics, Winter Olympics, thank God. I can't stand watching that shit. Watching the Winter Olympics, I'd rather watch freaking Vince Wilfork screw his wife. It's brutal. I'd rather watch the NFL Combine, which I've been watching the last 2 nights, 2 days. I'd rather watch Johnny Manziel run around in his freaking bra and panties and watch friggin' some out-of-shape guy run a bobsled and freaking down friggin' sled. Ridiculous, brutal. Can't even stand watching that shit. So I'd just rather watch the Combine as it stands and listen to Rich Eisen and his bad jokes and Mike Mayock. I actually like Mike Mayock. I don't know. People give him a lot of shit. Listen to Mike Mayock, but at least the guy bleeds football. You know, watching that bullshit. Oh, forget it. And Costas and his wonky eye. No, I'd rather watch old people screw than watch their Winter Olympics. But it's at this point now where, you know, NFL is year-round anyway. The NFL is year-round anyway, so we got to watch the NFL Network and watch all this, you know, guys run around and do these drills that mean nothing. 40-yard dash don't mean anything. I don't care what anyone says. What's the difference between Johnny Manziel running a 4.68 and running 4.5? All I know is that fucking guy is fast, and you can't tackle him. But enough about that. Let's bring up my boy, a guy I haven't talked to in forever. Guy's been a good friend of mine for shit. I hesitate to say this. 10 years now, and here we are. Ashawn Larkins, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. I haven't seen you forever. I can't even think of the last time we spoke. Oh, down memory lane. You staying out of trouble? How's Alabama treating you?
It's country, man. Different lifestyle.
Different lifestyle, I can imagine. It must be a different recruiting element. And this is one thing I've always wanted to talk to you about. And I freaking, you know, I don't know why I just didn't pick up the phone and talk to you about it. But coming off the Citadel, I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Citadel. But if you could briefly explain the differences between coaching and recruiting specifically at a place like the Citadel, as opposed to recruiting in a place like Jacksonville State?
Well, there's a real big difference. The big difference is at a place like the Citadel, your pool is a lot smaller, number one, because of the academics. It's nothing like, academically, it's nothing like a Holy Cross or a Lehigh or a Cornell, but there are academic elements of it that's a little bit more stringent than Jacksonville State, but also you have to find the right guy. So if you find a guy that's good academically, that doesn't mean that he's going to be a fit for that type of lifestyle, which makes it hard. Now you come to Jacksonville State, and really you just have to qualify. So the pool is a lot bigger. You have a lot more people to select from. That's really the main difference, though. You got to find the right guy at the Citadel. That's really hard.
As a recruiter, you must feel like a kid in the candy store, because now, I always said that, like, Citadel, I'm like, what would a kid want to go to the Citadel as opposed, you know, you figure you got to take the kids who don't go to the Naval Academy, the kids who don't get into West Point, and those are the type of kids you probably go after. Whereas Jacksonville State, you're just looking for a kid who qualifies, right? And what do they get out of the Citadel? Like, you know, other than discipline the structure, but when a kid graduates, when a football player graduates from the Citadel, what do they walk out of there with? What position are they in?
No different position if you come from Jacksonville State. Really, like, you know, it's all about who you know. Yeah. It's like getting a job in football. So if you graduate from the Citadel and you don't really know anybody, you're one in a million. So really, but obviously you have to sell that to people, but it's no different, man. No different.
So you come out of the Citadel. I don't know enough about it. You come out of the Citadel. You don't get a rank or nothing. So if you join the military right out of the Citadel, you don't come out of there an officer or anything?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, what happens is you have to basically, it's an ROTC school. But if you go and say, hey, I want to be in the military, all the branches are built into the school. And then you have to go through certain trainings. Like if a guy was on a football team and he said, I want to go into the military, he'd have to spend a summer or two doing like basic training to prepare him, to give him the rank. But if you come, once you do that and you come out, you go into the military as a second lieutenant, as if you went to the Naval Academy or West Point. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because I have several kids. A kid right now, we have two kids in the Naval Academy, kids I coach in high school, and other kids going in. And I could see that, but it always blew my mind. I'm like, fuck, why would you want to go to the Citadel if you're coming out of there and you still got to go through basic training and shit? Because you come out of the Naval Academy and you're like a lieutenant or something. You know, it's got to be hard to recruit. Got to be hard.
It's very, very, very hard. Very hard. But the thing about it is it's a developmental school. I mean, as far as recruiting, you can't spend a lot of time. And I did that my first year or two. I spent so much time trying to find the best football player, and it's unrealistic. I mean, you know, you have the ability to beat some schools here and there, but mostly you're trying to find a gem that nobody else has, and you can develop them into a good football player.
Yeah, to a certain extent. We all know talent trumps everything.
You know? Oh, for sure.
Who are some of the teams? You guys played. I know, was it last year, the year before? You guys tried to run with Florida State, and there's a couple teams you guys played that were just like, Jesus. You know, who's the toughest team? Who's the toughest team you ever coached against?
Oof, the toughest team I ever coached against. We played Florida the year that they won the second national championship with Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin and all those guys. They kicked the crap out of us.
You can say it's internet radio. You can say whatever you want. It's internet radio.
No, you get the picture. Yeah. They beat the brakes off of us, but they scored like 70. They could have scored 100 if they wanted to.
Oh, I'm sure. I coached when I first got out here. I don't want to turn this to me, but I was the head coach of the team that had the worst losing streak in the history of Southern California. So it's nothing worse. Yeah, you get into games, you play against some teams, there's nothing worse. I'm sure you face this, which you got no shot. You know, deep down in the back of your head, everybody freaking knows it. You guys going to Florida against Tim Tebow at the Citadel, you know you have no shot. How do you try to get a team prepared? I mean, do you outright lie to him and say, hey, we got a shot. We got a shot against tackling Percy Harvin, because I've watched Percy Harvin play. Nobody can tackle Percy Harvin.
Right. Well, the thing is, you know, you try to make it about you. And what I tell my guys every week, I say, you know, you're gonna, whether you're better than the guy or not, it really doesn't matter. It's about you going out and executing your technique. Now, if you come in on Sunday and you say, hey, that guy's just better than me, then so be it. But, you know, did you execute your technique? And at the end of the day, that's what you have to ask. You know, you have to ask yourself an answer. So, you know, we try not to make it about anybody, so we don't have to lie or, you know, or make it bigger or smaller than it really is.
I know it's. It's got to be tough, though.
That's the only way around it.
That's the only way around. Otherwise, I'm flat lining them. Some of those halftime speeches must have been difficult, you know. But you guys did all right. You hung in there, right?
Yeah, we did okay. We've done okay. I tell you, we played in 2011. We played South Carolina at South Carolina, the last game of the season, and we were down probably by 7 with about 8 minutes left in the game.
That's right.
You know, but it was that we were in the triple option at that time, so you know that gave us somewhat of a chance.
Well, you.
But then when you got
you guys ended up going to the triple option in the last couple of years, as I've been, you know, looking on the internet and stuff, and that's, it seems to me that's why the academies go to it, because it's something, it's about execution, and it's about, you know, just drilling it, and those guys are used to being drilled. What made this, what was the discussions like when you guys finally said, Coach Higgins, finally said, we got to go to the triple option? Was it something that has been kicked around for a while, or did he just kind of all of a sudden say it?
Well, you know, the thing about it is, you know, as you start to get up in divisions and level of college football, a lot of it has to do with the alums, you know, and the Citadel doesn't have the greatest tradition of football. So what happened was the alums, you know, the last time they had a really good season was 92, and I was a little kid back then, but, you know, they figured, oh, triple option, but what happens realistically is you're not going to go out. You're not going to be able to get, you know, 8'6", 6'4", you know, 300-pound offensive linemen. That's not realistic for a military school, just like we talked about recruiting. So, you know, your best bet is to get a, you know, 5'11", 6', 260-pound guy that can move and it's not going to get recruited and play with him where, you know, once you get into the triple option, you know, the size – you know, is neutralized by the scheme. So we figured, hey, we got to get these guys. We can get these guys. Let's do the triple.
Last question about the Citadel, and we'll move on to bigger and better things. What do you think? What do you think personally of that triple option attack?
You know what? I mean, there's so many forms of it. The reason that I like the triple option, you know, is because it forces you defensively to coach fundamental football. I think where a lot of teams get themselves into trouble is, you know, they go against a triple option and they try to change their scheme, and that's what triple option teams want you to do. But we see triple option all the time. So, for instance, if a team comes out in a 3-by-1 set with the back strong, and they fake the handoff, and that number 3 receiver bubbles, and they fake the handoff, or they give the handoff, or the quarterback keeps it, or he throws it, which Oregon runs, that's a triple option.
Yeah.
You know? So it's all the same, but it's really all how you look at it. And that's the thing. Again, it forces defenses to be fundamentally sound. It forces you to be a really good coach, because if you're not, you get exposed. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, I actually tried to run a variation of it. And the thing is, you know, the school I had, it was, kids weren't very committed. And the thing with the triple option is, and even the good teams, they put the ball on the turf. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The ball fucking goes down. And that is the biggest problem I had. I like it. I like elements of it.
Yeah.
But the ball goes on the ground. And you must have had that all the time.
Now here's the thing though, you know, like our first year, I mean, there were two games. We played Georgia Southern and we played Wofford. We had 14 turnovers in those two games back to back. But it really goes to, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator going against it, if you're making them give the dive with your fronts, then they're probably not gonna fumble. If you're making them pitch the ball, it's more likely that they're going to fumble. If you're making the quarterback make that second decision, and the, you know, then it's a problem. So, you know, some teams they never force the fumble because they're in a 6-1 or a 4-3 defense, and the they can just run the snot out of the dive with the fullback. You know what I mean?
Yep. The thing I've learned, though, about the triple option, and one of the things I kind of integrated in my last year is being a head coach. Now I'm just an assistant, but which I prefer, but that's a different story for a different day. I think you need to have another person on the field who can throw the ball. I think the double pass needs to be implemented more in that triple option look, where you get another cat where you can hand the ball off to him or whatever, how you're going to get the ball and have him put the ball in the air. I think that's a key that a lot of triple option teams just don't do.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, even but even more than that, just the quarterback. If you look at all the triple option teams, the quarterbacks, they can't throw themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, so teams end up packing a box. Like, you know, we face teams that, put everybody in the box. And if we can just get the ball over their head, you know, once or twice, then the triple option works. But the quarterback can't throw himself. You got problems.
You do have problems. Let's move on.
Let's
move on from the Citadel.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, we had National Signing Day. But, you know, a lot of people think that's the end of the recruiting era. That's not the end of the recruiting season at all. Right now, in this part of the season, the recruiting season, what does a typical week look like for you as you go into work tomorrow?
Well, the first thing, you're recruiting, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're being a new staff, we're divvying up areas. So the good thing is I have an area that I'm really familiar with. I've been for 9 years. So the thing I'm going to do tomorrow, you know, I'll take, you know, 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 20 minutes there. And I'm, you know, just calling coaches, getting their 2015 kids and lists and starting to watch film just every day, plugging away little by little.
Let me give you this. Do you have California?
No. We don't go that far.
You should. And let me just interject, because it is Hot Yards LA, and it is. Kid, I'm kicking it here now, man. I'm freaking well entrenched in the area. And I'll tell you what.
You know what?
Well, go ahead.
You know what? Listen, you're from New England.
Sure.
But that fits you. California fits you. I had a roommate that I played with at Lehigh who was from the Bay Area, and that fits you.
Yeah, I love it. Can't beat it, man. I freaking go out and teach kids freaking how to play freaking street hockey in 80-degree weather in freaking February. I can't, you know?
Do you still play the bass?
Of course. Of course. You know, I got another project going on right now as we speak. But, you know, band-wise, it's always a lot of fun. But I tell you what, one thing about California football, and if you do come out here, and I really do think you should, because I've been thinking about this all day, you don't want to recruit the high schools. You recruit the junior colleges, because I don't know if you know anything about the junior, the JCs out here, kid, but the JCs out here are freaking phenomenal, because it's a chainsaw bracket. And actually, you know, like wrestling, actually, you know, on a side note, because I can say whatever the hell I want, I'm actually an assistant wrestling coach right now. I'm actually an assistant wrestler. Yeah, I know, right? And you're a grappler yourself, which is funny. The head coach needed somebody, and I was like, screw it. So I spent, that's why I got a cold. I spent all day at the semi-state tournament yesterday, shaking all those damn hands, and you know how after every match I shake the hands, and now I got a cold. I got a cold all of a sudden. But what I'm getting at is, in the JC, and those are the kids that slip through the cracks, because in California high school football, it's funny. You can have a team in one city that's terrible, and then you can have a team in the same city that's got 4 or 5 scholarship athletes running for it. You know what I mean? It's unique like that.
Yeah.
So they weed themselves out with the junior college process. It's unique. I think Texas is kind of similar to that. But my point is, if you could get some people out here, and there's only about 7 or 8 of them you'd have to hit, you could get a couple JC gems at a place like Jacksonville State. Now you have the handcuffs are off. You can recruit people who just qualify. I'm telling you, we'll talk after the show. I'll hit you up.
Yeah.
There are plenty of places you could pull a kid for 1 or 2 years. A couple kids I know personally that you could pull 1 or 2 years and come out there and get them and be real difference makers. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I need the connection for sure.
Sure. You got it. You got it right here.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
Jacksonville State has been a successful program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a Jacksonville, Alabama, or is it based out of Jackson, Alabama?
Jacksonville, Alabama.
Where is that geographically?
It's There's a main road, Interstate 20, that goes from Atlanta to Birmingham. It's slap in the middle of Birmingham and Atlanta, and when you take that midpoint, you go north about 15 miles, and there it is.
About 10,000 kids.
Yeah. Yep.
You guys were good last year, right? You were, what, like 11-3 or something like that?
11-4, third round of the playoffs, lost to Eastern Washington.
Is this a new staff? How did you get on? I mean, you touched upon earlier. It's who you know. How did you get in on this staff?
Well, you know, the head coach here was the offensive coordinator last year. When I first started recruiting Alabama, he was at a school in Birmingham called Spain Park. Well, it's actually in Hoover. But he was there, and I met him. You know, we would talk every year, and then he went to another school called Oxford, and I signed a kid from his school. And, you know, we just kept in touch. And then when the job came open, I hollered at him, and that was it.
Thank God. That's gonna be difficult. And I think about it all the time. You know, I cut ties with it. I walked away from the college game because for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons is, and I think you probably have seen this, you get pigeonholed and, you know, oh, he's just a one AA guy or FCS, whatever you call it now, or he's just a Division III guy and he's a high school guy. And you know, it's extremely difficult. And I don't know if you have any stories about frustration of trying to get jobs to move up. I don't even know if you want to do that. But, you know, staffs pigeonhole you, oh, he's just a 1AA guy. Have you ever ran into something like that?
Well, yes and no. Really what happens is, you know, since it's a business, it's really no different than somebody trying to close a corporate account. You can be a great closer. You can be a great coach. It really doesn't matter. You know, for instance, like Sean Spencer, right? He happens to be at Penn State. So if he's in a position where he can hire someone, you're really not pigeonholed anymore because you know him. He knows you're a great coach. He's going to hire you. You know what I mean?
Have you talking to him at all?
Yeah. Man, I talked to him more than I talked to Ricky Ronnie.
Oh, I'd love to get those fools on, but I told you what happened. They freaking put the kibosh on her. Oh, they won't let me do it. I mean, this is freaking America.
Really?
Is it? Yeah. I know. That's just what he says. I mean, I believe him because we've been going back and forth, and, you know, I haven't talked to him in years, really. And, you know, text here and there. And, yeah, they freaking, no, you can't talk to him. I'm like, what the fuck?
That's odd because that's free publicity for Penn State. Are you kidding me?
What I'm thinking what happened is he told them the show and they went out and they freaking Googled it and then they started listening to it and they said, no, dude, too controversial, which I like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know me, man. I love controversy. Controversy is good for this art.
Controversy creates cash, kid. You know it. You know, I don't know. I don't get it. He said I would have whatever. I'd rather talk to you anyway because you're way cooler than that fucking dope. You know what I mean? And Ricky must have got, you know, I apologize to my 10 listeners, but Ricky must have got Spence that job, though, at Vanderbilt, though, huh?
He must have.
But bottom line, come on.
He had a really good say in that. I would think.
What do you, so as you sit now, I mean, hey, one day at a time, one step at a time, I know you're going to go out and get some balls at Jacksonville State, but where do you see yourself career-wise? It's going to be tough after, you know, you don't lose your last job, but the coach leaves. Where did Coach Higgins go, by the way?
He went to Wake Forest as the receiver's assistant head coach.
Yeah, but where do you see yourself? Yeah. Where do you see yourself in a few? What are the career goals?
That's a good question. You know, I want to run a defense. That's my first goal. I want to be a head coach in a way, but it's too CEO-ish.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I look at head coaches and they don't really have an opportunity to be around the kids and mix it up and have real relationships with them because they have so much other crap that they got to get done. You know, I'd say this. I said this before. My dream job to this point would be to coordinate at Stanford.
Yeah,
and that's because you know me, man. I'm one of those academic guys, man. Yep. I love being around smart kids, and that's the smartest, highest level that you can get to. So at the college level,
that's my first goal. The thing I like about, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but the thing I like about coaching high school is you got all levels. You know what I mean? You got the special ed kid, Then you got the kid that could go compete. We have several kids. Captain's going to Yale this year. You have different levels, and I really like getting the development of a kid. You get him as a freshman in PE, because I teach PE now. You get him as a freshman in PE, and you get that development, and then by the time they're getting ready to go and getting recruited, they're men. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that, but you get kids at other schools, there's a ceiling. You know what I mean? As far as what they can do. So, you know, there's another question for you. How many text messages a week during the height of the recruiting season do you send out? Is that preferred method of recruiting, or is it still phone calls?
It's messaging on Twitter.
Yep.
And you know what? The thing is crazy, you know. And my philosophy as a coach is to try to keep it as simple and as short and as concise as possible, because these guys, their attention span is crazy.
Yep.
You know, and Twitter's great because there's only 140 characters. You know, you force yourself to be really concise with these guys, and you know they're on Twitter all the time. So if you message them on Twitter, they're back at you, you know, within 3 minutes. So that's the mode of communication.
But damn, kid, don't you just sit down? I mean, you got a family now, right? You're a married man, right? And you got a couple kids?
Oh, yeah. One. He just turned 2 in November.
Congratulations, man. That's great.
Thank you.
But you got to sit down and watch freaking Ice Age 2, whatever, with your daughter, and then someone's blowing you up every 2 seconds. You know what I mean? That's the shit that would drive me bonkers. You know what I mean? You can't walk away from it.
Well, I tell you what drives you more bonkers is the fact that you're really kissing a 16 or 17 or 18 year old's ass, and your livelihood depends on that, you know, and they can't make a decision, and their parents, you know, who are supposed to be the adults, are saying, hey, it's their decision, you know, and it's the biggest decision that they've made in their life to date, and it's screwy, man. It's a tough situation.
I've talked about it on this program before. I couldn't do it. You know, it's got to a certain point in my life where I'm like, look, I just don't think I could be that closer. You know, this freaking pasty-faced white boy walks into these living rooms, and I'm like, I don't think I could do it. You know what I mean? I could, and I would hold a grudge. If a kid freaking, I put all this love in a 16, 17-year-old kid, and all of a sudden, you know, yeah, coach, I'm coming. And all of a sudden, he says, no, I'm going to go somewhere else. Man, it's tough not to take that personal.
Well, you know what? The first thing, though, but to me, that's the best part about it. You know, you get married. You're married. I'm married, so you can go out and talk to women. But it's the same thing. You know me, man. I'm a smooth cat.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
You know, I live for those. You know, to go into a house and see a parent, and it's all strategic. You know, it's do I show more attention to the dad because he was never a player and he's trying to live through his son, or you know, do I show more attention to the mom because you know she wants to be wanted, or do I show you know more attention to the kid? And you get into those situations, but realistically, what you realize is at the end of the day, none of that shit matters. It doesn't. What matters is the name on your shirt. You know, so if I go to Alabama, I don't have to, if I'm a coach for Alabama, I don't have to be a great recruiter because Alabama's going to sell itself.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? You know, so what you try to do is, you know, when all things are equal, you try to be better than the next person, but you're going to get turned down so much that after a while, you're not going to take it personal because you're going to figure out it ain't personal and you're going to waste a whole bunch of your energy. You know, so your goal is to try to get to the level where you can sit back, you know, pick your nose, and a kid falls in your lap and he says, I like that school because they're on TV, and then you sign them. And then you become a great coach because you're coaching great players.
Right, and that's why, I have texted Ricky back and forth, and when we would text back and forth when he was at Vanderbilt, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to come out there, recruit, and then the last text message I got from him, he goes, I'm going to come out there and evaluate. Oh, now he's going from recruiting to evaluate. Yeah, right? You know what I mean? So now it's going to, like, begging, you know, because Vanderbilt has its issues, you know, especially in the SEC. Right. And now he's recruiting, now he's evaluating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's exactly what he's saying. Yeah, they're gonna come. You know, you build it, they will come.
Yeah, but again, you know, he's at Penn State, and their head coach is a great football coach.
No doubt.
He's a great communicator, and he's a great recruiter. But I tell you what, for as good as he is and as good as he was at Vanderbilt, there really ain't got many shots for him to beat Alabama or LSU. That's just the way it works. There's not going to be many opportunities for him, even in Western Pennsylvania, when they're in Pennsylvania, to beat Urban Meyer. Not because they're not better than them, but just because the brand sells itself. And I actually got that nugget from Kirby Smart. You know, I worked with him at a camp a couple of years ago, and I said, hey, you know, give me some tips. You know, I want to be a great recruiter. I know to be at a Division I A level, that's what you got to do. He said, man, that stuff doesn't make a shit. He said, you just got to have the name on your jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I wasn't a great recruiter when I was at Valdosta State, but when I got to Alabama, I ended up being pretty good. And it wasn't because I changed anything. Just what was on my shirt.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. And Penn State, well, you know, as a New Jersey guy, you know, they got to go. They got to snatch that shit back from Rutgers. They got to get all the Jersey cats. They got to get certain areas of Ohio. They got to lock down Pennsylvania. They got to pull a couple kids from New York, New England. But they're fine. Mm-hmm. But they're fine. I could see. And the whole Sandusky thing, which I talked about ad nauseum, because I knew Jerry Sandusky personally. But that's all fucking going away. Kids won't remember that in 2 years. No one's going to remember that. And I can guarantee you within the next 3-4 years, Penn State will be back on top of the they'd be them and Ohio State and everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's the information superhighway age. So, you know, it's really, you know, things come, hot topics, and they go, just like the guy, you know, from Missouri. That's a hot topic, but that's going to be not thought about pretty soon once the next controversial topic comes up. So they'll be fine. Yeah, I agree.
They'll be fine. Be interesting to see what happens there in with the rest of the guys. All right, let's talk special teams because you're special teams coordinator now, right? Well, you were at Citadel for a while as well.
Yes, sir.
Now, personally, of course, it's tremendous. I won my first football game as a head coach on a blocked extra point. So there is, you know, special teams, to me, they talk about being a third of the game. I disagree. I think it's like 40% offense, 35% defense, and 25% special teams. That being said, if you had to rank the most, I'll give you the most important two special teams. If you had to lock down the two most important special teams, what would they be?
Well, based on what your percentage is, it would have to be punt return and kickoff return, because to me those are the first two plays of offense.
Mm.
But I would say the most important probably to me is punt return.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the second one would be kickoff.
Well, I think you can take care of those two things. I think if you have the kid, if you have a kid who can put the ball through the end zone, problem solved. First and foremost,
right,
on kickoff. You know what I mean? And we had a kid,
right,
and that's another kid I should text you. He puts the ball through the end zone every time. I think personally, it's punt, and it's going to segue into another question, and field goal. It's punt, field goal.
Well, let me go. Before you hold that thought, let me go back to this real quick. And this might seem a little bit crazy, but I don't want a kicker that puts the ball in the end zone.
Really?
Yeah, because think about this. If somebody at the college level, if a kicker puts the ball in the end zone, they get the ball at the 25. If I can get a kicker to put the ball on the 3-yard line on the numbers and tackle you at the 15-yard line, I have a better chance of stopping you from scoring.
It's a roll of the dice, though, kid. It's a roll of the dice. You know?
I mean that's the way it goes, man.
Yeah, I guess I'd rather take the guaranteed 25-yard line myself, and I just put the ball in the back of the end zone and play ball from there. Because, especially, you know,
well,
go ahead.
Would you? But I mean, you gotta think. I think 3 or 4 out of 5 years that I was a special teams guy at the Citadel, we, you know, with inferior athletes, we averaged, I want to say, about 17.5, giving up 17.5. yards of return.
on kickoff?
That's pretty damn good, cuz.
Absolutely, it's great. But I think one of those reasons is you got some next man up, storm the beach mentality of kids who are just going to go balls out and freaking do exactly what they're told and go freaking run, and you know what I mean? Whereas you find that one chink or that one chink in the armor of that one kid who is not going balls out, you know what I mean? And it's trouble.
But again, it's the motivation factor. You know, like for instance, you know, at the Citadel, it doesn't, you can have guys that want to go balls to the wall and have good intentions, but you know, you've coached. If they're not a good football player, that doesn't matter. They're still going to get their faces knocked off. and that's what we faced at times. But it's really sometimes all how you motivate the guy. If I can get a guy that's a 4.8 to run a 4.6 down there every time, then I've got a shot. Here at Jacksonville, the thing that we've got really good athletes. The problem that we have, though, is, you know, we're warming up. We're doing morning workouts the other day, and I walked by, and I said, you know, I'm with the defensive guys, and I said, hey, man, I need 11 goons to run down on kickoff and get this thing, you know, knocked down. And, you know, some of the guys are like, oh, yeah, he'll do it. I'm not doing it. And I'm like, holy. So, you know, yeah, now we might want somebody that can put the ball in the end zone.
Exactly. But at Citadel, they're all putting their hands up, right? They're all be like, coach, I'll run down there. I'll run down there. And Jackson's like, I'm not a kickoff guy.
Not really.
No?
But not really. No, not really. You know, just like, you know, guys that are starters, they don't want to do that shit. They don't want to run down there. They, you know, they want to come out on the first play of defense and play. But, you know, sometimes you got incentives. You know, sometimes, you know, my wife might have a bag of cookies for somebody, so he might run down a little bit faster. You know, it all depends, but I think we'll be able to get guys to run down there, and if we can get guys to run down, I think we'll be better than 17.5 yards, which means now the punt return team comes on the field. You know, 2011, we tied a national record. We blocked 9 punts.
Wow.
You got a chance to win a lot of games.
Yep. It's a huge play. A block punt is one of the biggest momentum changes you can have in the game, period. You know?
No doubt about it.
Now, let's talk defense for a minute. We've been at it for a while. Give me, you know, briefly, your personal defensive philosophy.
Okay. Well, let me say this first. I remember sitting in a bar, me and you, Ricky, and Ryan Roeder, and you saying, man, I love that spot drop stuff, you know, where guys just got their eyes on the quarterback, and I'm like, nah, that shit sucks. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I am all the way on your page.
All right.
But here's my philosophy. I am a keep it simple, let guys play fast.
Exactly.
I'm what you call a rally zone coach, where we want to keep the ball. We want the ball to be completed, you know, 5 yards or less, you know, to the line of scrimmage, and we're going to rally and tackle it. So that's me. We're going to situational blitz you and just let guys go.
Limit the big plays and take the mental aspect out of it. And let's just talk about Holy Cross for a minute, because I'm sure Tom Gilmore and Ike Collins are not listening to the program, okay? Right. That was a long time ago now, and I remember sitting back there and being like, man, we some intelligent guys sitting around the defensive staff, and I don't think everybody was on the same page and what the hell was going on. And people who knew the game, and that to me was the biggest problem from day one, is there was just too much confusion on that defense.
Yes. It was a classroom, chalkboard. You know how when you sit down a defensive guy and an offensive guy, and you say, if you do this, then I'm going to do this. If you do that, then I'm going to do this, you know, on the chalkboard. And we tried to take that onto the field, and it actually helped shape my philosophy as a coach, you know. And I said, hey, if you're thinking, you're stinking. You got to be able to play, and we weren't able to do that with inferior athletes. That was a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. And it's what happened. And that's what happened. Right. And it was a frustration. You know, and I had been at the game coaching. I was a little bit older than you guys. You know, I had done it. And I'm just sitting there going, what the frick, you know? You got guys like Bobby Earhart, you know, rest is whatever he is now, you know, and freaking just saying shit. And I was like, what the fuck? Nobody knows what the hell's going on, you know? And,
right.
Yeah, I'm glad you said right. that. Thanks a lot. You know, I mean, I'm not, but you gotta, you can't put fear of thinking in defensive players' heads because it is a recipe for a freaking disaster.
Yes. Absolutely.
You see it all the time. And speaking of Holy Cross, and I think this is one of the great ironies, and I think it's funny as hell, and I'll try to keep this brief as possible. Obviously, Coach Gilmore and Bobby Earhart, who was a linebacker coach, didn't see eye to eye. They had some blow-ups at the meetings, as we know. But here's the thing that always made me laugh through the years is that quarterback that they got at Holy Cross who tore it up, I forget the kid's name.
Dominic Randolph.
Yep, exactly.
Dominic Randolph.
You know who recruited him, don't you?
You?
Bobby Earhart. Bobby
Earhart.
Yes, he did. He's from the Chicago area.
Wow.
He's from the Chicago
wow.
area. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know that whole class that we recruited that one year, their senior year, they won the championship.
I know it. Right? And there was just, and nobody stuck around. I think within a matter of 2 years, everybody was out of there, right? I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was out there. I mean, Gilmore's still kicking around there, but they were, what, 3-9 this year or something like that?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I know that's your boy.
Like that.
I know that's your boy and all that. And,
hey.
You know.
Yeah, it is what it is. The truth is the truth. I think he's a good guy off the field. You know, I think he's going to be who he wants to be and do what he wants to do and. I can respect that at the end of the day.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as we've grown older and all that, I respect the guy, and you know, I don't think he's a bad guy and all that stuff. But I am amazed that he's been able to stick around for 10+, you know, going to be 10+ years. I'm amazed, especially you know, guys like fighting the soccer coach. I don't know if you remember that. The guys like fighting the soccer coach in that first year, and I can remember telling my parents, and my parents still, even to this day, when I go home and, you know, we're just kicking around and be like, oh, that guy's still at Holy Cross? I'm like, yeah, I can't believe that guy's still freaking at Holy Cross, you know? He's a volatile fucking guy. And he, you know, he's hunting around. I don't know how much, because that's a school we both know, they want to win. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think you can be a really good Patriot. It's still a Patriot League? Still called the Patriot League?
Yeah.
It's still, it's a place you can win. But now,
well, you know what? I think it's difficult to win there because their academic standards are as the closest to the Ivy League that you can get. With the facilities and stuff, you're not going to beat Lafayette. You're not going to beat Lehigh. You're probably not going to beat Colgate. And Fordham is just a whole different ball game. They're competing recruiting wise against the Delawares and those type of schools. So I think it's going to be hard for them to win in that conference consistently.
Yeah, well, they haven't in the last 4 or 5 years or whatever
right.
it may be, but. I don't know. It was a freaking interesting time, man. I'm living in the freaking kitchen, and we would get out of there at 11 o'clock, breaking down Duquesne film. Remember how much time we put in breaking down Duquesne film, and then they came out in a completely different offense.
They kicked our balls off.
Yeah, right. They beat us 40-0, I believe. And then we played Jim Harbaugh in San Diego the next week and got our asses kicked as well. And it's just one of those
things. Destroyed it.
But that was some good times. So it was one of those things, you know, looking back on it, you know, we get out of there at 11 o'clock at night, hit the bar till, you know, 3 in the morning, come back and bullshit, and then get back up at 7 and freaking drag ourselves back. It's one of those things that, you know, you can't replace it.
We could do it, man, at that time. I tell you what, I can't do that now. I can promise you that.
Oh, no. Well, I can do it maybe once every month, but no, I choose not to, you know what I mean? I go to bed at about 9:30. I get up at 6:30, got my 7 a.m. PE class out there, kid, running, you know how it is. You know, got my coach's shorts and my freaking grays, freaking loving it.
Hey, Hey, do you ever wear the bike shorts? The one with the two buttons?
I have three pairs. I had to freaking dig deep into the internet to get some freaking pairs. But I got some blue ones, some gray ones. But you know what? That's lost on kids. Kids are like, oh, shorts are too tight. Like, they don't appreciate that shit. You know what I mean? And I rock it. I love it. You know, easy living, kid. Easy living. Hey, I got a few minutes. Let's talk NFL real quick.
Yeah.
You spent some time in personnel in Philadelphia, right?
Yes, sir. Sure did.
You've been watching the combine, I take it. You keep track of what's going on, right?
A little bit.
Obviously, we Giants, which is another sidetrack. Freaking Ryan Rota is a freaking coach for the Giants, by the way. You got Ryan Rota coaching for the Giants. You got Ricky and Sean Spencer coaching for Penn State. You got you at Jacksonville. You got a couple other guys floating around. I'm freaking teaching freaking girls how to play volley tennis and shit. You know what I mean? But I digress. But if you had the number one pick right now in the NFL, if you're the Houston Texans, who do you take?
Ooh. Wow. Good question. I'd have to go with, personally, Bridgewater.
I love Teddy Bridgewater.
I'd have to take him. I'll tell you who I wouldn't take.
Ooh.
I like going that way. Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, too many red flags with that guy.
Yeah, he's you know what? He's, you know, those picks, I mean, you can't miss on those picks. You know, when you get those high picks, if you miss on those, that sets your franchise back 3 or 4 years, which means, you know, your longevity as a head coach is only 3 years. But he's not a Julius Peppers. He's not a, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul. He's a big, semi-athletic kid who thinks he's better than he is. Don't want to be around them. But I would take Teddy Bridgewater because they need a quarterback.
I don't think you can go wrong with Johnny Football either, man. I put all the knocks on him. The guy's special.
Well, you know what? He is, but he's a spoiled rich kid.
Yeah, true.
Too many problems.
That's true.
You know, you to me, you want a guy that's safe, that you don't have to micromanage. You don't have to sit around and talk to him about talking to the media or going out and doing stupid things. You want to coach him on football. I think that he's gonna have too much of a learning curve outside of football. But in between the lines, special.
It all depends. If you get a defensive minded head coach, okay, and then you stick Johnny Manziel on that team and you teach him how to run the pro system and let him take off and run, a la Russell Wilson. You know what I mean? If you're asking him to go out there and win games for you, then I think you can run into trouble. But if you can ask him to go out there and just not do anything stupid and make big plays with his feet, I think the guy could win and win soon. Like Russell Wilson and Kaepernick. And Kaepernick.
Yeah. Well, I'd say this. I'd go out on a limb and say this. His tools, he's a better player than Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
But Russell Wilson will not hurt you off the field.
I don't think he will, though. I think it's one of those things. I don't know. You know, I think his whole life has been built around it. I don't think he's going to screw it up. Because they say, like, they talk to his old team. Because there's been so much written about this kid. You know, they say, like, in school and stuff, that he's a really nice kid. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that he's a nice kid. But being a nice kid and being mature are two different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to me, and obviously this is all propaganda, right? This is all based on what we get from the media and seeing him on TV. To me, he's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out on a Tuesday night and gets into a bar fight.
Mm. Right.
And then, right, so again, to me then, you know, on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you've got to be sitting with him as a coach, and you have to be talking to him about the media obligations. You got to be talking about what you can and can't do, as opposed to, hey, this is a too high look. This guy is dropping down here, which is the thing that he's going to need because, you know, when those teams start screwing those guys around and moving guys late in the snap count, you got to be prepared for that.
I think
and that's my only concern.
I think, yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things, Obi. All right, last question. Got to throw it at you because I was just reading this the other day. I'm like, you know what? It's a good question for Locke. What do you think about the new NFL rule where they're going to, supposedly it's going to go in effect, where they're going to drop a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for dudes who are throwing out the N-bomb. What do you think of that?
Ah, great question. I don't know if you enforce it there. I don't think that it's right to enforce it on the field, but I think it has to be addressed.
Yeah.
I do. I think that race is an issue, and I think people, you know, they try to say that, you know, they dress the word up and they try to say that it means something other than what it is, and the root word is ugly, it's disgusting, and I think you have to try to stop it. Is that the correct way? I don't know. I don't think so, but, you know, they're going to do what they're going
to
do.
What if a playoff game came down to that, though, man? You know what I mean? I think what's happened, and I talked about it, you know, a little bit on previous episodes, but what happened is you got kids who were born in 1992, okay? So they're 4 years old, and they're listening to Snoop and Dre and the Chronic with the words being thrown out like nothing.
Well, great albums, by the way,
both. But I sit in locker rooms nowadays, right? And I just sit and observe and listen. And, you know, you'll have a Mexican kid throw it out at a black kid, and it's nothing. You know what I mean? It's almost like homie or dude or guy or man. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, it's easy for me to say it. I understand it because it is ugly. But I don't know if you can drop a flag and completely change a football game on that. I don't know why they couldn't just keep track of it and find the guys after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that you should try to control it on the field, especially when there's so much emotion involved. Just like the Sherman thing.
I mean,
come on, let a guy be who he is. You know, if you want to ask him a question, or if you want guys to be themselves, then you got to live with it. But I think you have to find a way to attack it. I mean, I can tell you this much: if a guy says that around me on my football team, it starts with 75 push-ups.
Here it is.
You know. But I don't necessarily agree with that rule. I don't think it's going to help. I think it's going to cause more controversy.
Yeah, especially, you know, that playoff game comes unsportsmanlike conduct. We're like, what the hell's going on? You know, because they're not going to be like number 75 dropping an N-bomb. You know what I mean? It's just
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those things. And then running out of time. Everyone's talking about your special teams guy getting rid of the PAT. Get rid of the PAT, yes or no?
Yes.
You think so?
I would. You know what? If I were the head coach, I'd go for two anyway. Think about it.
Good point.
If you're 50% on two-point conversions, you win.
You don't have to sell me, man. I've read the literature. I've read all those rigging books over the years. You know what I mean? You don't have to sell me on that. You can get a two yards. The problem is they end up with this, you know, like the Patriots in the playoffs, they run a freaking inside zone on the two-yard line with no third of the quarterback running. You know what I mean? It's just bad play selection. And that's a whole different time for a whole different subject about play selection in the NFL. Go back and listen to the library because I attack it every Sunday. It's ridiculous how bad the play calling is in the NFL. That's why I jumped. That's why I became a head coach, because I wanted to call offense. Because you right now, the only way you could ever get on the offensive side of the ball if you're a head coach. You know what I mean? And there's so many things you can do, and offensive guys don't do it because they're afraid. You look at Colin Kaepernick throws up a fade route against Richard Sherman to go to the Super Bowl. Are you kidding me? You're going to throw a fade route against a 6'3 corner who just has to get a hand on it to go to the Super Bowl? Ridiculous. You know what, Locke? I'm running out of time, kid. I would freaking, anytime, I'm going to, I got your new number. So I'm gonna give you some. I'm gonna give you some calls, especially, you know, not during the season, of course, because I know you're a busy man. But I love talking to you. You're my brother, man. It's good talking to you. You're the best.
Yes, sir.
Stay out of trouble.
Yes,
let me know if you need anything.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Man, holler at me, man.
I will. You know. You know. Give my best to SP too. I haven't spoken to that fool in freaking years forever either.
He called me today. I'll let him know you said what's up.
Oh, let him know I'm thinking of him. Let me freaking give him my number. Let him text me. All right, my man.
I will. All right, brother.
Good talking. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
All right. That's it. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess. I got a bunch of twit bag questions that I can't get into. I only got about 30 seconds left. What else do I even want to talk about? Ray Rice, real quick. I think Ray Rice is going to be suspended badly. He knocked his fiance out, but I'll save that for another time in another episode. That's it. I'm the coach. Follow us on Twitter at HodYodsLA. That's it. I'm out of here. I will see you next week with Bells On. Later.